I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Donon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast. You may be surprised to hear I am still Nick Whitfield, and I'm joined by two others today, and we will get to that, but let's dive straight into Around the Association. Now, after last week's controversy, we can officially and undeniably brag about having reached 400 episodes. That is kind of a big deal. Kind of. I want to, on behalf of everyone at Double Clutch, thank absolutely everyone that has ever appeared on an episode, listened in any format, watched along live, been involved in any way at all. If you've contributed to Double Clutch in any way, thank you. We couldn't do this without any of you, and it's all for the culture and the community. The Phoenix Suns continue to run rampant through the NBA with an absurd 17-game win streak at the time of recording. The past week has notably included wins over two direct title rivals in the Nets and the Warriors. I'm not going to say too much about the Suns here, as we'll be diving in great depth into everything Phoenix this episode. There are also signs of life from the reigning champs, with the Bucks building up a seven-game win streak of their own. They sit fifth in the East at the time of recording, but with momentum, we could be watching their run back up the table. The team notably signed DeMarcus Cousins to a deal that could run to the end of the season, adding another veteran presence and front court depth. On the surface, despite the past few seasons having been challenging in terms of on-court performance and health for Boogie, on paper, he may well provide some of the same attributes that the team has missed with the ongoing absence of Brook Lopez. I don't know about you, but in my eyes, it's never too early to start looking at the following year's NBA draft. Excitingly, two of the top projected draft picks for next season matched up this week as Duke defeated Gonzaga 84-81. Duke's Paolo Banchero dropped 20 first half points in the win, looking absolutely unstoppable as a do-everything 6'10" forward that really thrives in transition. The Zags' Chet Holmgren currently is on pace to finish this season as the only player in NCAA history to average at least 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, 4 assists per 40 minutes. And he's doing this shooting 86% from 2 and 37% from 3, and he's 7 foot tall. Both players look like they could be real difference makers in the NBA. As a UNC alumnus myself, I do also feel it's my duty to point out that Duke University did in fact lose their next game to Ohio State, however. So yeah. Following a Knicks loss to the Nets, Knicks fans have lightheartedly launched a GoFundMe page to raise $25,000 in order to fight Scott Foster, with $20,000 going to the winner and $5,000 as the bribe to the referee to win the boxing match. The single mistake here, in my opinion, is that it wasn't a pro wrestling match in place of boxing. Then I would have been all about this concept. In actual bad fan news, there have been another round of courtside fans being kicked out of arenas for personal comments aimed at players. Two fans in Indiana were removed after making what has been reported as comments about LeBron James's family to him on the court. Similarly, there was an incident in Memphis where a fan was removed for targeting comments at Tristan Thompson about his former partner and the woman with whom he shares a child, Khloe Kardashian. We saw this last season too, as fans were welcomed back into arenas, but seemingly forgot how to behave like functional adults. I'm not sure there's any real debate to be had here. However much you've paid for those expensive seats, it entitles you to admission to the game and nothing more. Using the perceived anonymity and security of the crowd to shout toxic comments at the players is cowardly and embarrassing. Be better in general, fans. And okay, on to our guest today. We have Matt Alvey, aka Mr. Phoenix Suns UK. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. And I am joined again by Harry Harrison. Good to have you back, Harry.
Boom.
Simple, but it works. Love it. Okay, so starting off, Matt, what I like to do when we have a guest on is get to know you a little bit. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? We know you're a Phoenix Suns fan. How did you become a Phoenix Suns fan?
Okay, yeah, so I'm from the south in Kent.
The mean streets of Kent, I heard.
Mean streets, yeah. When you live this close to Mike Miller, you've got to be careful on them streets. But I'm originally from Dover, which is even more dangerous, of course, you know, being near the sea and everything. But yeah, I got into basketball and the Suns through my sister's boyfriend. He sort of put the ball in my hands and he supported the Suns, and it was the only team I knew, apart from the Rockets, because of Charles Barkley at the time, because I thought he still played for the Suns, and I recognised him from the Suns uniform in Space Jam. But yeah, that's how I got into it, and sort of he joined a local basketball club, and I just started going along with him, and it kind of went from there.
So when you started watching the Suns, what era of Phoenix Suns are we talking about here?
Back end of sort of backcourt 2000. So Penny Hardaway obviously sat on the bench injured, and Jason Kidd, sort of into Sean Marion. I remember getting home from school and going on the computer to see who we drafted and seeing Amari Stoudemire and not being able to pronounce either of his names. So yeah, I've been around since sort of that period. Like, I always remember, it sticks in my mind when it was on Sky Sports, and the opening sort of credits and that, when you have flashes up of players, it had Jason Kidd in Suns garb sort of thing. So yeah, it was around that sort of time.
I have to say, I've always had a soft spot for the Phoenix Suns, because in the entire time I've watched the NBA, whether they're good or they're bad, they've always been a fun team to watch throughout the whole period. And I also have a small... when I was about 16, I think, 16, around that age, I went to a basketball camp and met Steve Nash, who was a rookie at the time. But they had that insane backcourt at that period where they had a rookie Steve Nash, they had Jason Kidd, and they had Kevin Johnson still. So, I kind of looked on at the Suns at that point as like a secondary team that I'd follow. So yeah, always enjoyed watching those guys. So who are your, like, when you like go into your jersey collection of Suns players, who's your go-to? Who's your all-time Suns guy?
It's got to be Steve Nash, just because playing guard, I'm a little guy, so I play guard, so you look up to it. But I think Amari Stoudemire was just so exciting as well. So it was, they're like 1A and 1B to me. They were the guys. I was 14, 15 when we got Nash back as a free agent. So sort of prime time to be influenced by someone. So yeah, he's the main guy for me, number 13. But yeah, I think the only sort of big player of the Suns that I haven't got as a jersey is probably Sean Marion. But yeah, Nash is the go-to.
Have you read the book called 7 Seconds or Less about that Suns team?
No, I haven't.
I cannot recommend it highly enough.
I listened to a podcast. I think it might have been Locked on Suns, and they had the author on and they were talking to him. So I've got it like open sort of on a tab on my phone to buy off of Amazon, which is one of those things I never get around to doing. But yeah, it's definitely one that's on my list without a doubt.
How did you, and this is, as a Knicks fan, this is a very relevant question for me, who have been a bad team for a long time. The Suns went through a really dark period. How did you, what was your mood over that down period? And it feels fine to talk about it now. The Suns are so good again.
So I do actually call it the Dark Ages. I genuinely do, even though the jerseys are probably as orange as they've ever been. It was at a time in my life, actually, where I wasn't following the basketball as much. Like, I would be into it. It was fine. I was upset when Nash left. I followed the team that had, like, the Morris twins on it sort of thing. So I always followed it. but I had stuff going on in my life, so I wasn't as ingrained in the NBA or the community at the time. But no, it was horrible because all I'd ever known as a Suns fan was success. And I was kind of like, well, in our 2010 run, I was 20, so I kind of understood that that was sort of like the end of the road for that team and understood what rebuilding was and stuff by that point. So I kind of knew it was coming a bit, but I absolutely loved Goran Dragic. So I always had him as my bright spot. So I knew the team wasn't performing great. And then I think in 2014, we had that sort of surprise run and missed the playoffs by one game. So you had that. So it was always like this optimism. It was always like harking back to the past. You always had this sort of undertone optimism. But yeah, it was horrible. I kind of just focused on the players more than the team itself. So like after, you know, Bledsoe came in and he was, you know, at the time they were calling him like baby LeBron or whatever they used to call him. And, you know, he was looking to be an all-star player. And obviously that didn't work out. And then I really liked Isaiah Thomas. And then we signed him. Obviously that was a very weird experiment that didn't work, unfortunately. So yeah, there was always players that I could pick out. Even when we sort of got Tyson Chandler, one of my favorite centers in the league at the time, just because, you know, you throw the ball up, he chucks it down on an alley-oop. So it was always sort of a player on the team that I really liked and could attach myself to and things like that. And then Booker coming through. So yeah, I kind of didn't focus on the results. It was horrible how long it actually took. But we got there in the end. And I think the bit that frustrated me the most is when we were coming up and people were still talking bad about us, like, you know, the 70-point game by Booker in Boston. Yeah,
did lose that game, though, to be fair.
Yeah, it was stat padding. But at the same time, to score 70, like, to think that some of us play in our local leagues and probably hit one shot, and he's doing that in his second year in the league, and still no attention. That was the sort of stuff that got me, not so much. When we were all bad, we were all really bad. That's fine. But when you've got some, like, this budding star on the team, they're still not getting that respect. That used to bug me. But, yeah, we know your opinion and your where you put us in your predictions, Harry, last year. Did you learn your lesson this year?
And Harry, there's a couple of things I'd like to put to you. One, we're going to have to give the people what they want. What squash are you drinking?
Well, I think I've noticed that's come up a few times, and I think it was established not long ago that I'm in the Discord that I'm something of a squash connoisseur. They are both, and I say both because there's two squashes in it, they're both Robinson squashes, and I've got orange squash and apple and blackcurrant squash in one squash. And it sounds ridiculous.
Also, just to link this to this episode, both Suns jersey colours, so you've done well there.
Yeah, well done. Thank you.
That was
Thank
the
you
plan,
for doing that.
Really.
Yeah, cheers, man.
That was the plan, really. But yeah, it's
a also, Harry, carry on. This is what we're here for.
I was just saying, it's a fantastic combo. I discovered it at a fancy residential camp in Ireland. And I've drank it almost every day since I was about 12 years old. So
fantastic. This is the content we're here for. And Harry, hypothetically, if you were a fan of a basketball team in the NBA who wasn't the best at winning games, how would you cope with it?
with not winning games?
Yeah.
I don't know. You probably just glorify your star big man, act, you know, tell everyone that he's the best in the league, and everyone's just, you know, sleeping on him. Even though he can't defend for anything. But that's probably how I would cope.
Okay. I'm glad, hypothetically, I'm glad we've dealt with that. We are non-hypothetically going to talk about the Timberwolves as well in a bit, so we will get there. But coming back to the Suns, so Matt, it sounds like you're obviously a huge fan of those 7-second teams, which I get. They were one of my favourite all-time teams to watch. How far off is this current team in your mind as like your favorite team ever?
Do you know, I've been thinking about this sort of leading up to the Brooklyn game and the Warriors game, because this current team, they've matched the other big team, as in like the 93 Suns going to the finals. They've now matched the 7 seconds or less teams with 17 wins in a row and probably about to break that record even without Booker against the Pistons. So I'm wondering whether this is potentially the best Suns team there has ever been. I hadn't tweeted it because I wanted to put it out here first, but I do wonder if they are. I absolutely love watching this team. One of the things about the 7 seconds or less, as fun as they were, there was a limit to what they could do. And it was due to the fact that the coaches never forced them to play any defense at all. They were willing to do it. They wanted to do it, but there was no focus there. This current team, they just seem to be able to do it all. There's not really, you can say that there's some weaknesses, but the way they're playing at the moment is just ridiculous. It's just crazy.
For do you me, think there's the any
full team that we've had?
Do you think there's any? Are you noticing any difference in last year's team versus this year's team? One thing I've seen floating around is whether this team has a little chip on their shoulder, feeling a bit disrespected after the finals run, as though they were kind of didn't deserve to get there because of injuries to other teams and stuff like that. Do you think there's something to that?
Definitely. When you look at sort of the way Chris Paul conducts himself and he remembers everything and he'll sort of not quite that Jordan mentality of like making stuff up that someone said something to them, but that kind of they're listening to what the media are saying. They use it all the time. And Booker is exactly the same. And you hear it in the press conferences after. They'll just drop little hints that they've heard this disrespect. Like you can guarantee that they heard that Stephen A. Smith stuff with JJ Redick. You can guarantee they won't bring it up, but you know they've heard it because JJ and Chris Paul are great friends, and they just you know that his attitude has trickled down through everyone. So yeah, I think it really has put a chip on their shoulder. Keep counting them out. It's fine. It worked for us last year. I don't mind being the underdog. It's quite fun to watch. We all love an underdog.
And obviously this week there were big wins over the Nets and the Warriors, two of the favourites you could meet potentially in the Western Finals or the Finals. Was there anything in those two games in particular that stood out to you? Because I know when I watched the Warriors game in particular, the defence played on Steph Curry, particularly by Bridges, and how Ayton was able to switch on him absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It's exactly what you said. The defense has been the reason for this streak, because if you look back, our offense was really bad at the beginning. We've improved, but it's been the defense has been the staple all the way through. And yeah, Bridges has been amazing. If he doesn't make an all-defensive team this year, I think it will be very questionable of why these people have allowed to make, you know, these votes for them. But yeah, it's just incredible. And I think, and Chris Paul says it's quite a bit, and I do believe it, I think they're just such a well-prepared team. I think the coaching staff all know their roles. They come in prepared. And like the defensive scheme was to slow down Curry, and they were successful. I know there's lots of stuff floating around saying he had an off night, which he probably did by his standards. But you can't, like, one off night against a team that you're probably quite pumped to go against, then you're seeing clips of him being blocked or being hassled all the way to the hoop and stuff like that. I mean, I think I saw something like, if you can take him out of the game, the Warriors' sort of offensive rating is like second from last, but if you've got him in the game, they're like first or second. So I think that was the Suns' game plan, and clearly it worked. And I think having Mikal at the front sort of picking up their best player, knowing you've got DeAndre Ayton behind you, is incredible. There's a guy on Twitter called David Nash. His handle's at the IV point play, at the 4 point play. And he does a breakdown and a newsletter all the time. And he did one today covering the Warriors game last night on Mikal's defense. And he also highlighted the way the team, their help defense. It was incredible. So yeah, defense is the thing, and I think everyone really buys into Monty's system offensively and defensively, and I think that's what it is. It's just everyone meshing.
And what about you, Harry? As a non-Suns fan, has anything stood out to you about that team?
I think the main thing, it's the same as last year, but the longevity of Chris Paul and how he's still doing what he's done his whole career now, at however old he is. It's too old to be doing what he does. He's the same as LeBron. He just seems to continue to perform despite the fact many of those around him at a similar age may be starting to decline. I think that's the main standout thing for me. Obviously, the whole young core and the way the coach is putting things together and drawing things up, it works and they all perform really well. But I love Chris Paul. I always have. And so it's really sick to see him winning, winning well, and, you know, being having a good shot, maybe a ring this year, finally.
I actually get bored. I bore myself about how I just go on about how good Chris Paul is, because thing I hate is you can't talk about him without it just kind of going into cliches, basically. Because one of the things I always think about him is, and again, I'm immediately going to cliche number one, a lot of what is good about him doesn't show up on the stat sheet. In things like decision making, are they'll show in some ways, like assist to turnover ratio, assist numbers in general, that sort of thing. But like how he's able to like decide between a 7 out of 10 pass and a 9 out of 10 pass, and every single time make the 9 out of 10. That's the sort of thing where an assist is an assist on the stat sheet, but it doesn't show you how he actually manufactured that basket. And the other thing, which is like the most impressive thing about his longevity to me, his age and relatively small stature by NBA standards, is how he's able to play defense still. It shouldn't be possible at that age and that size to be as good as a defender as he is. But I can't imagine how annoying he is to play against if you're a point guard. But yeah, do you know what? Someone else who I think has caught my eye for the Suns this year, who no one ever talks about, but JaVale McGee was a really underrated pickup. And going back to like right at the beginning of his career in Washington, he was, when he played starters minutes, he was always among the league leaders in rebounds and blocks. But he kind of got this like shacking reputation of always doing dumb stuff and that sort of thing. But I think that just completely overshadowed what he can actually do on the basketball floor. What have you made of McGee this season, Matt?
So I've been calling for us to sign McGee since probably we lost Aaron Baines when he left in free agency, so at least 2 seasons. So I was absolutely over the moon that we got him this offseason. I think at the time, $5 million felt like a bit of an overpay, but what he's done so far is just absolutely fantastic. So one of the big criticisms of us during, especially against the Bucks, is that when Ayton left the floor, because we didn't have Saric, there was no defense down low at all. And what's really cool is that they're both rim protectors, but they do it in different ways. So Ayton doesn't get a lot of blocks. I think he's averaging less than one a game. But he defends keeping his hands up and jumping and all that sort of stuff. But McGee is just on pogo sticks, even at his age now, because he's what, 34? And he's been in the league, what, 16, 15 years, maybe? It's been a long time. And just that rim protection and the fact we can just throw the ball up and play, you know, have the same offensive plays in the pick and roll for him that we do Ayton, means there isn't a big shift like there was when we had, as much as I love Dario, I really do, but the offense changed when he was on the court. And the ball kind of went through him a bit more because he's great passing and stuff like that. But we can play the same with JaVale or Ayton, and they both crash the boards. I don't know if this is a true fact or not, but I believe they are the best centre duo in the league right now. It's brilliant. I didn't realise, like when I was campaigning for him to come on the team, how good he would be. He's surprised me. And I think the other night he had like 14 points and 11 rebounds, something around those numbers, in like 16 minutes. It was just crazy. I haven't looked into it, but his per 36 must be really, really high.
And we're saying all these good things about the Suns. I want you to go on record right now. How confident are you about out of 10, out of A, reaching the finals, and B, winning a championship?
Oh, it's difficult. See, I've still got, and you guys will know it, being who you guys support, but I've always got this underlying, we can't beat them. We can't beat them for the last 10 years. Like, I've always got it. So I predicted we'd lose against Brooklyn, and I predicted we'd lose against the Warriors, but on Friday. It's just, I just always have that. So even last year, I didn't see the run coming. I think I said the second round. So out of 10, I think a 9 that we get to the Western Conference Finals. And maybe a 7 in the finals. Because I think if we play the Bucks again, even though we've got more size, I still don't think there are many teams that can stop Giannis if he plays the way he did. And he definitely picked up his game against us and stuff like that. The Nets, I think, will just be on fire. So, yeah, I'm going to go 7 in the finals, but 9 to get to the finals.
And as a Knicks fan who had to endure this last season, I have to ask you, in the few minutes he's played this year, how has the Elfrid Payton experience been for you?
Not too bad. So I was a bit like, oh, God, why are we getting him back again? That was my initial tweet when I saw it. But then like people spoke at me.
And he doesn't even have weird hair now as well. So he's lost.
No, it's not even anything fun. And that's one of the worst things. Like if I've written about him, I put in that and it comes up all the old pictures with the fun hair. And I'm just like, oh, there's nothing special about you. But I think you've just got to understand that he's a third stringer. And that's what when I was kind of put out my exasperated tweet first of all, and I was like, oh, why are we getting him back? People were just like, look, he's the third string, he's not going to see a lot of time. It was a bit strange last night. I don't know if it was just because Booker went out, but we saw him and Campaign on the floor at the same time, and I think my expectations for him are very, very low, so I'm always kind of like, oh, okay, you just got to expect that he's not going to shoot, he's going to drive to the hoop, he's going to make some passes, he's going to grab some rebounds. But in the limited minutes he's had, yeah, I think he's been a plus. He hasn't been a negative while he's on the court.
I also have to say, any player whose first and last name make a different word is amazing in my book. So Campaign is really up there for me. One
Can
guy...
Open and looting out, by the way. Just a comment there.
Elliot's thrown in that the Suns are going to lose 10 in a row and he's out. So thanks for your participation, Elliot. Appreciate it. So one person who's conspicuous by their absence in that we've barely talked about him yet, which is criminal, Devin Booker. Do either of you have anything? It's a bit like when I talked to Elliot about Kevin Durant and I'm just like, he's amazing. Is there anything else to say? Devin Booker, absolute baller. Anything else?
Can talk about his improvement. The main thing is his three-point shooting. So there's this thing around the league that he's a good three-point shooter already. But actually, if you delve into the stats, he wasn't. He wasn't at all. He was just
below average.
It's always
been one of my NBA mysteries with him because his shooting form is amazing as well.
Yeah. And the amount of long twos, as in like foot on the line, he would get
his Kobe shots.
Yeah, exactly. I think the reason he was always seen as a good three-point shooter is because he hit them when he needed to, so he'd go 1 for 6, but that one would be in the clutch sort of thing. And also he won the three-point contest, but this year he's 41% from three overall, which is leading the team, which he's not done ever, I don't think. So that's really cool. And I saw some crazy stats, like he's in the high 40s for like pull-ups and corner threes as well. And I think it's all coming down to shot selection. I think in the past, it's always been, I'll jack up a three because there's nothing else. Whereas now he's in a system, he's getting a lot more open shots. He's playing off the ball more and it's just clicked. And I think maybe as much criticism there's been about the Wilson ball, I think actually he likes that ball. And I think that's what it comes down to. But yeah, may it continue, because I think the three-point shooting takes him from an all-star to an all-NBA player. I think that truly is a difference.
Anything on Booker to add, Harry, before we move on?
He's out himself. Silly use. No, he's... I find that Devin Booker playing well and the Suns doing well is a little bit of heartache, because I remember when the Timberwolves got D'Angelo Russell, I was so convinced that we'd get Devin Booker as well because they're all buddies. So you know, that's why it hurts when the Suns and Devin Booker do so well. But you can't deny the fact that, as Matt said, his three-point shooting has taken a big jump this year. He's playing better, he's playing smarter, I think, as well, which is a key thing you can touch on with young players as they're maturing in the league, is well, playing smarter. And that could be linked to playing alongside Chris Paul and the fantastic decision-making he has that we've mentioned already. But no denying that Devin Booker's made a jump this year as well.
Question in the chat is he an all-star?
And Devin Booker?
Yeah, he has to be, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
yes. It was, yeah. It was like, even the last two seasons, it was crazy that he was an injury replacement, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're talking about all NBA, that means you're automatically an all-star.
And I think as well, the Suns' record has to push his votes up, right? That you can't vote this year and not include him, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why he got given the Western Conference Player of the Week, to be honest. Obviously, he had incredible stats as well, but if you've got incredible stats and the team's losing, you don't get a chance with that award. It all goes hand in hand.
And final question on the Suns before we move on. And I'm sorry to ask a slightly more depressing question, but I have to ask it. How are Suns feeling about the Sava situation?
So, for long-time fans, like myself, I actually wasn't surprised by any of it. There's been rumblings for a long, long time about the way he is. And you kind of seen it with the stuff with like the previous GM, Mike Madonna, stuff he used to say to him, or like the GOAT fiasco and stuff like that. I just think it's really good that people have been brave enough to come forward and say it, because no one should have to work in that environment. Whether it's true or not, if you personally feel you've been harassed in some way, it's true. Like, even if it was a joke from Sava or whatever, it's unacceptable. What I didn't like about it is the things that he has sort of said, no, that didn't happen. Yet he admitted to cacking someone in front of 60 people at a team event. I'm sorry, if you're willing to do that, you're definitely willing to say the things that you've, you know, that they're claiming you've said, in my opinion. But I just think we're very, very lucky with the GM we've got, the coaching staff we've got, the team we've got. I think they've been able to just block it all out and get on with it. One funny thing to think about, though, if we win the championship, how's that going to work? Are the NBA after this really going to want to hand him that trophy? So I think if anything does happen, it does look like the Suns are going to be a really successful team. You might see the investigation speed up around playoff time to get him out, in my opinion. I mean, Suns fans want him out. He's awful. He's cheap. You know, you've got a successful team. And we've seen, to be truly successful, you've got to pay money. And out of the billionaires that own all the teams, he's one of the poorest billionaires. So selfishly, I want a better owner, because I don't want this situation like we've had with DeAndre Ayton, like not paying him, to happen in the future for some other key cogs to our team. So yeah, very, very disappointing to have negativity around the team again, following the steps that we as a team have taken to get positivity around it. But like I said, not surprised by these accusations against him. I do think they're probably true, unfortunately.
Thank you. Yeah, very good summary. And I can't argue with anything you said there. So let's move on. Let's get to your Timberwolves, Harry. 7-3 over the last 10 games. It was quite a miserable start to the season, but things look like they're looking up in Minnesota. Winning record, you're over 500.
Again, finally, since we were 2-1. Yeah, I'm feeling good. But it always happens where I start to feel good because we win a few games and it all goes to down the toilet again. But I do feel this current one run is a little bit different. I think, well, 7-3 at the minute, in the Western Conference at least, is the third best record over the last 10, behind only the Suns and the Warriors. Tied for fourth if you count all the teams in the East that have gone 8-2. We're playing well, which is the good thing, and we're playing convincingly, and it looks like we're addressing the issues defensively that we have had issues with for so many years. And well,
What do you think is what do you think is different in this run from that poor start?
I think, well, D'Angelo Russell missed a few games at the start of the year, particularly the last four or five games. D'Angelo Russell's been fantastic. We did lose in Charlotte, but, you know, D'Angelo Russell has gone from being a subpar defender to an adequate to average defender, which, to be honest, is he can do. You know, he's got good length, he's a very clever basketball player, and so it's a big question mark as to why he maybe hasn't been an average defender in the league before. But he can do it, and I think it's something that the Wolves need, and for the last few games he's done it fantastically, you know, specifically late on in the fourth quarter and in overtime against the Sixers. Two big steals, big baskets, big shots. D'Angelo Russell has actually been playing fantastically. I think, overall, I think Chris Finch has done wonders for this team. I think most of the improvement output at Chris Finch's office is at Chris Finch's office door, because he knows how to make an offense, he knows how to design an offense. That's really where he kind of specialized in. But also to help other players, maybe like Pat Beverley, who was ahead of a pickup, to really integrate a more of an attitude and a more of a determination and grit to play defense has been brilliant. So that, I'm not really sure what's changed from the start of the season. Probably is just D'Angelo Russell coming and actually being an efficient basketball player, in a sense. But I think it is just only maybe we're just starting to gel a bit more. It took a few games, we had a bad start, but, you know, we won six games in a row, and I don't know the last time I was able to say that.
And as a current University of Sheffield student, I'm not sure if you're aware or not that Chris Finch, for a long time, was the head coach of the Sheffield Sharks in the BBL. So there's a big Sheffield element to the Timberwolves now.
There is. It made me very happy.
Between you and Chris Finch, right there. The underrated thing about Chris Finch is his namesake in the TV show The Office as well. Have you ever seen The Office? Finchy.
The American one.
No, the UK one.
Oh, no, I've seen the American one.
you need to watch it just for Chris Finch, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
One of the interesting dynamics I see on the Timberwolves. Actually, before I get there, let's talk about Anthony Edwards, who's had, I think, by some people's expectations, maybe a slightly disappointing rookie campaign. He really came together at the end of last season, but obviously it was weird circumstances the whole year last year for everyone. But this year, not only is he putting up the numbers, but he's had some of the most absurd highlights and near highlights of any player in the NBA.
It wasn't a charge. I'm putting it out there now. It was not a charge. That should have counted. I'm still a little bit sore about it, but it is what it is. I think it's just an example of maybe in the last few games, despite the fact that we do win games at the minute, I think the officiating against them in certain balls has been a little bit unfair, but I can come on to that. It's more related to kind of Anthony Towns than anything else, but we can come on to that in a bit. But Anthony Edwards has been good this year. He's still, as a young player does, and he's only his second year, he's still working on when's a good time to take a certain shot and when's not. I think that highlight dunk he had against Philly, a lot of the highlight reels cut out the fact that he airballed three about half a second before he dunked in the lane. So, you know, there's still question marks on his decision making, his shot choice, highlighted, I think, in the loss against Charlotte the other day. But he's been good. He's been good, and it's nice to see other players be good on the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Here's the thing I was going to say before, but we've got there now. We've discussed how good Anthony Edwards is. I'm also a little bit concerned, and this is something I'm looking out for on this team, is I look at... when I watch the games, the thing that strikes me as a little bit weird is when I look at the numbers after watching the games, it confirms what I see when I watch the Timberwolves play, is that Anthony Edwards is actually averaging more shot attempts than Karl-Anthony Towns, despite Karl-Anthony Towns being way, way, way more efficient as an offensive player in basically every possible way, which seems like a strange... with Edwards being the younger of the two, only in his second year, and Kat being who he is, just accepted as one of the best offensive players, front court players in the NBA, that's something to watch for me. I'm not saying it's necessarily good or bad. It's just a little bit weird, and I'm going to be watching that to see if that evolves as the team develops. Have you noticed that? Is that something you're looking at?
That's... the amount of shots that currently Towns get has been a consistent issue for a couple of years. You know, sometimes we'll watch games and I'll look at the stat sheet the next morning because I cannot be asked to stay up and watch them. I'm too busy. I need to go to bed. But I'll watch the games on highlights after the next morning. I'll look at the stat sheets on social media. And sometimes currently Towns will take in 12 shots in the game. And it just, how does that work? I think it's changed a bit. Under Chris Finch, he is getting more touches, but the league is perimeter centric. And you know, we've been winning games, so I wouldn't look. I don't want to look too much into it, but I've always said that I want Karl-Anthony Towns to shoot the ball more. I think he should shoot the ball more, but I think that'll probably just come. I think, as I said earlier, Anthony Edwards is a young player. He's already established himself as a solid offensive option, and so when he gets the ball, I think he's looking to score, and so that's why he takes so many shots. And granted, Kat does get his still. He still gets his, but yeah, he needs to shoot more.
And with an eye on time, I'm going to move us on. But just two guys who also caught my eye watching the Timberwolves is Jaden McDaniels and Jared Vanderbilt, who are the kind of guys who any team would like to have, who just kind of do all the hard work and get the hustle stats. And yeah, I just wanted to shout out for those guys. One thing I wanted to ask you guys... and it's mainly because I had someone in mind in my head. So these could be from any team, but I've called this section Don't Get No Love. Who is a player you enjoy watching that just doesn't get talked about enough, and why? And let me start us off. Who I had in mind watching this is Christian Wood for the Houston Rockets, who he does two things that I really enjoy. And it's... I really enjoy teams who is part of why I watch the 7 seconds or less Suns to death, because I love pick and roll teams. And what I love about Christian Wood is he's like a next gen role player, in that not only can he do the like Amari style, Amari-esque, just roll to the hoop and dunk or whatever, but he's actually like at the next level where he doesn't just go in like straight lines to the hoop. He actually like receives the ball on a pick and roll and then Euro steps in his two steps. So it's like, even if you're a recovering defender, that's like impossible to stay in front of. And the other thing he does where he when the help defender comes in front of him, he's so good at finding open shooters from the roll. That again, it's stuff that like doesn't show up in the stat sheet. You just notice it as you're watching games. But yeah, he's on a bad team, obviously, but I'd love to see him on a good team just for those sorts of like small things I notice when I watch him play. Is there any guys you think of like that, that you just watch games and no one really talks about them, but they do little things that you notice?
I was actually going to say about Vanderbilt from Timberwolves. So he got brought to my attention probably during the playoffs when some like Suns speakers were talking about free agency, and they were talking about just having a hustle guy, sort of like in that Torrey Craig mold that we had at the time, and he got brought up. So I was like, oh. But ever since he got brought up, he just, yeah, complete hustle all the time. You'll see him do something on defense, just run down the court, you know, and just do the dirty work, just the real dirty work. Like, he's not going to ever light up the stat sheet, But just that dirty work is just really, really fun to see.
I'm going to agree. I'm going to go with Vando as well.
This is the most shout-outs on any podcast he's ever had.
Yeah, definitely.
Go on. Vando 8, what a guy. But I was listening to another shout-out to the Locked On Podcast Network today, but Locked On Wolves, Mr. Beacon, who hosts it, there was a reference that he brought up. It wasn't his own, but he referred to him as like the league's current Dennis Rodman. And that's exactly how I see it. Every team's got to have a player like Jared Vanderbilt. And I think that, to be fair, would be another reason as to why Minnesota have been so successful, because he's getting minutes and he's playing well. I think in one of the games recently, Jared Vanderbilt, it was against the Sixers game, because we started so well. We were getting points in the paint every possession, and offensive boards as well. And we built up a double-digit lead of some sort, and it all went away, but that went when Jared Vanderbilt went off the court and we weren't getting second chance opportunities. So players like Jared Vanderbilt across the league, all of them, they don't get talked about enough. Kings.
Okay, and I'm going to try and keep your answers short for this one, just with an eye on time. But as a Knicks fan, I was curious to get your non-Knicks fan views on very strange thing with the Knicks this week, with the team essentially just announcing that Kemba Walker is out of the rotation. I put some numbers in the Discord as to why the team were making this decision, which essentially amount to the fact... with him off the floor, the Knicks have the best defense in the league by numbers and defensive rating, and are literally the worst defensive team with him on the floor. They're also 27th in offense with him playing and 9th when he's not playing. So, the numbers don't say Kemba Walker's helped the Knicks on either end of the court so far. Appeared this week that they were looking into a trade with John Wall, who obviously hasn't played at all this year. As non-Knicks fans, what did you guys make of that potential trade scenario?
Do it.
How about you, Matt?
So first of all, I was going to say, those stats that you read out, isn't that a similar thing that happened when he was with Celtics last year as well? Like, I don't think this is a surprise to anyone. For one, the trade, I don't think it's true. I don't think that's been spoken about at all. I think it's just someone's gone, oh, two point guards that are not really wanted by their teams, let's swap them over. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Doesn't make a huge amount of sense money wise either. Wall's on like 40 mil. Kemba, I think, is on just under 9, I think you put in the chat. So it's a bit of a weird one, but I do think it's just been thrown together to, you know, they put 2 and 2 together to make 6 sort of thing.
Okay. Let's move on to the greatest part of the podcast. Hit me, Kirk.
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
Okay. I have recently got involved in motorcycle riding, and it's definitely not a midlife crisis. No one said it was, and it definitely isn't, okay? But anyway, it got me thinking about if I was, and I definitely will, start a motorcycle gang, who from the world of basketball, past or present, would I and should I recruit for my motorcycle gang?
I think the key one, most obvious, would have to be Dennis Rodman. He's got to be in there somewhere just for that one scene. And obviously, we knew he rides motorbikes, but in The Last Dance, when he rocks up in Las Vegas, hops on a bike and pisses off somewhere.
I actually have to say, he's I'm going to be honest, he's already got the invite. It's in the post. He's there.
Yeah. And he's the main.
I also thought, actually, before I say anyone, did you come up with anyone for me, Matt?
Yeah, although they're probably already in a bike gang. I was going to say Birdman, Chris Anderson.
Nice.
I just think the tattoos work. I think he's into his bikes and that as well. I think
he's got the tats. He's
The
only thing I'm not sure the Mohawk will gel with a helmet very well. But I guess in the States they don't even bother wearing helmets a lot of the time. So, yeah, he may pull that off anyway. The other guys I thought that were just like, are definitely in a gang of some kind already, was the Jokic brothers, who I...
Yes. I was meant to say that.
Yeah, I feel like they are a true crime Netflix 10-part documentary series waiting to happen at some point, of which I will eagerly consume. But, yeah, they seem like... I feel like I would be aggressively pursued by a rival gang if I invited them, because they're definitely already in a gang. Anyone else before we...
Morris Brothers will stand on the other side of the street, like getting a lamppost to hold themselves back. So,
Kirk mentioned Boban and Luka in the sidecar. That's a good one as well.
I just thought that. That's good.
Yeah. These are all solid additions. I thank you for those, and they will definitely all be getting invites. Let's talk about what's been happening in our Discord server. I always say this, but if you are not a part of our Discord server, do join, because it's a good chance. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. All you do is get to talk hoops all day, every day, when you should be working. And that's what's important in life. So just a few things that I pulled out this week. NBA captains. Is it still a thing? Is it not a thing anymore? Why and why not? No one seems to know a comprehensive answer to that question. We know some former captains on teams. We know, for example, Udonis Haslem still seems to be a captain for Miami, and Jokic seems to be a captain for Denver. But according to Wikipedia, no other teams currently have captains. But that can't be true. So how do we get to the bottom of this? No one knows. We discussed where to buy junior, baby and toddler NBA jerseys, because they're harder to find than adult ones. Current favourites for most improved player. Obviously, there's ongoing fantasy league chat where, looking at the league standings, same old boring two. Team Bean and Southampton top shot, 6-0, undefeated. They can bore off, to be honest. It's much more interesting when you're losing and your players get...
Yeah!
Get your players injured. That's where the interest really is in NBA fantasy, in my opinion. And we had I'm going to use a word here, a plethora of questions from our Discord server. So I'm going to get started. Rich Hunt, what is your favorite song based on basketball? And also, what is your favorite rap verse or line about an NBA player or team? And Matt, I know you've done extensive research and preparation here. So give us your answers.
Okay, I'm quite glad we haven't got time to go through them all, because there's quite a few. I just want to shout out the worst one as well first. And Nelly Furtado, Promiscuous Girl, I think it is. They somehow squeeze Steve Nash into it. Wow. It makes no sense at all. At the end of the verse, it's like they were like, we've got like 4 bars to fill in. What should we do? And she goes, here's Chicka Chicka, I'm talking trash, the game bit MVP like Steve Nash. The only connection between her and Steve Nash, they're Canadian. That's it. Makes no sense. Always annoyed me. Always will. Wow. So, yeah, there you go.
I did not expect Nelly Furtado to come up at this question. And no, I commend you for that answer.
Well, it's just always been a real bugbear of mine. So I haven't really got a favourite basketball song. The one that initially came to my mind was a remix of Black and Yellow. Snoop Dogg, The Game, and Wiz Khalifa did a Purple and Yellow one. So there's that. Lil Wayne did a song called Kobe Bryant last year, sort of a rest in peace one to him. Basically, Jay-Z has done every single song. He puts a quote in. So obviously the famous one of coming back like Jordan wearing 4-5. Empire State of Mind, he says, I'm sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high fives.
And the line about you're buying LeBron, I'm paying Dwayne Wade, something like that.
Yeah, I was going to put that, but that's actually about drugs.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's about their jersey numbers and the price that Jeezy had to pay more to get his drug money, whereas Jay-Z is basically boasting that he doesn't have to pay as much to get his drugs because he's got connections. So I didn't put that in.
And this is why you're on the podcast. From the mean streets of Kent, you understand those references that went straight above my head.
Yeah, I do. It always confused me, so I had to look it up in my younger years. I'll move off of Jay-Z though. Got Lil Wayne as well in a song called Swagger Like Us. He says the type of shiz that will make him call you Carmelo. And in a song called Fireman, which isn't very popular, but he says, I'm addicted to the game like Jordan and Peyton. And then I kind of thought about songs that aren't about basketball, but that I associate with basketball. So you've got Forever by Drake, Kanye, Lil Wayne and Eminem. It was the song that was for the LeBron James documentary that came out maybe, I think it was like 2008, 2009. And that always reminds me of that. Probably the verse that came to my head straight away was Lean Back by Fat Joe. He quotes Rucker Park and basically boasts that he's such a gangster that he didn't have to get his team to play in the game to actually win the championship.
Matt, you have a maximum of one more you're allowed to mention.
One more. Okay. I am going to go with, because this is really, no one will ever think of this, I don't think, Jermaine Dupri, Welcome to Atlanta, parts one and two. He says, I'm the MVP most ballingest player.
Harry, anything from you?
Zero to 100, Drake, because he mentioned the swish, curry with a swish. There you go, that one.
But you made me feel very unprepared here. I came up with a single answer, which was just a single song. It's it's from a band called Band of Horses, and they have a song titled Detlef Schrempf, who, if you don't know, was a German guy. That sounds quite dismissive. He was really good. He was on the team that went to the finals in Seattle with like Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. So yeah, great song, worth checking out. Next question. Mike Miller. Is the NBA feistier this year? And if so, why do you think it is? I don't think we need to spend a long time on this one. Yes, it is. It's better for it because it's more interesting. It's a bit boring when no one cares about the result of a game and no emotion is involved. Does anyone dispute that?
No.
On to the next one. From Jonah Stark. Which is a better name? Ennis Cantor Freedom or Meta World Peace? Which way are you guys voting?
Ennis Cantor Freedom. I think it means more. It doesn't roll off the tongue quite as well as a Meta World Peace, but I think it means more. And I love Ennis Cantor and what he does, so I'm going with Ennis Cantor Freedom.
See, I was going the opposite purely because it rolls off the tongue better, Meta World Peace. But I actually liked Mike Miller's suggestion, which was World Be Free. I think that's the better one out of them.
Fat Lever was a great name as well. Also, Mookie Blaylock was always a name that stood out to me in the 90s and was also the original name of the band Pearl Jam, which is fun. I went for Meta World Peace only because I think Ennis Cantor could have gone further. If he was Captain America Freedom, I would have fully embraced it more. He should have gone the whole way. I feel like he only went halfway. Okay, and the second follow-up question to that from Mike Miller again is, which players should change their name? Did either of you have answers for this?
No.
Okay, I had a random couple. So I always think Mikal Bridges is like Inspector Gadget. So I thought it might be cool not to call him Inspector Gadget. Go one further, make it a bit under the radar. I looked it up. Inspector Gadget's actual name is Jonathan Brown. So nice. John Brown or Jonathan Brown. And then I was thinking marketing for quite a young player in the league. Grant Riller, change his surname to Rizzler. Branding. Might not be great branding, but it's an endorsement deal waiting to happen.
And I had a couple here. My first one, which was a bit obvious and boring, was just Stephen Adams needs to just accept the fact he's Aquaman and change his name. And the second one is a Knicks one, actually. And I feel like Alec Burks is such a boring name that no one realizes that he's actually like a better than average NBA player because he's got such a boring name and played for the Jazz for a lot of his career. And so I thought, what would spark interest if you just saw his name in a box score? And so I am rebranding Alec Burks as John Travolta. Because if you were just looking down an NBA box score and you're like, oh, John Travolta had 20 and 5 assists tonight, I think people would perk up and look at him a bit more. So, yeah, Alec Burks is John Travolta from now on. Next question. Another one from Rich Hunt. And this is the one I was complaining about in the pre-show, where, Rich, you've written like four paragraphs before the question. So, deep breath. Regarding early MVP talk, as the season has gone on so far, the narrative has been that either KD, Giannis, or Steph will win the MVP this year, with no mention of Jokic anywhere, even though as it stands, he has a PER of 35.57, which is not only the current highest PER for a season in NBA history, but it's by it is by 4.15. My questions are... So I'm going to read them out and then we'll go through them in sequence. A, why do you think people are passing up on Jokic's greatness even after winning MVP last year? B, who do you think should win MVP? And C, and finally, if Jokic continues this display of dominance, is there an argument that he could potentially be one of the greatest centers of all time? So I'm going to answer these quickly in order. Why are people passing on Jokic? It's simple. It's Denver's record. Unfortunately, they're not one of the best teams in the West this year, mainly because obviously Jamal Murray and now Michael Porter's out. Who do you think should win MVP? For me, it's Steph Curry currently, but narrative reasons could open the door to Kevin Durant, Chris Paul even, or Devin Booker. Yeah, those could happen. And finally, if Jokic continues to display, I think... Let's assuming Jokic just carries on even as he is, he'll be one of the greatest centers of all time. No questions. Either of you guys differ in any of those answers?
Nope.
No.
So let's go to games of the week that we've picked out. I picked out, and I'm looking at the list now, Matt, I didn't pick that game because I knew you'd pick that one. So I've gone for Clippers at the Lakers, 3 a.m. Friday night or Saturday morning, depending on how you say that. It's neither team is firing on all cylinders. They've got similar records. Battle of L.A. Paul George is having a monster season. He'll want to make a statement. Will LeBron play in that game? Not sure. Yeah, I'll be watching that one. I always find that one quirky as well, where because they play in the same arena, but one of them is the home team. It's a bit weird. Like, do they change locker rooms? It's a very weird scenario. So I'm always fascinated by that one. Which games have you guys picked?
Well, as you mentioned it, Suns and Warriors part two, Friday night, same time as that Clipper Lake again. It's going to be interesting to see how we do, especially with Booker now being out. I think Woj said earlier, a few games, see how we do. But then we beat them the other day without him. But the Warriors are too good not to adjust. So it's going to be a really good game, really interesting.
How about you, Harry?
Mine's for the people who are watching live, because obviously... this suggestion will be have already happened by the time this goes out on Spotify or something. But Wolves at Wizards tonight. I think the Wolves are going on a road trip now, playing, and it's going to be a tough couple of weeks in terms of opponents. We've got the Nets, we've got all sorts of solid teams coming up, and it's an opportunity to play against a team that, as surprising as the Wizards have been, the Wolves should probably beat in terms of the form they're in and the caliber of players. So it's an interesting one to see if Minnesota can start this string of tough games with a W.
And the early tip-off this Sunday is Jazz at Clippers, 8:30 p.m., which is nice. I like to try and pick out a few things that people might look for in that game. Do you guys have anything you'll be looking for in that game if you watch it?
Paul George.
Yeah, Donovan Mitchell, he's having a bit of a down year. It seems like the more he shoots, the worse he gets. So it'd be interesting to see if he can sort of pick that back up against a player like Paul George.
I will be looking for... The Jazz are one of those teams where I don't really care what they do in the regular season anymore, because as we've seen, they can roll over the regular season and then go out in the first or second round in miserable fashion. So I'm going to be looking, not only in this game, but throughout the season, if they're doing anything different that I think might translate into playoff wins. So yeah, that's what I'm kind of looking out for in that. And on that bombshell, we come to the end of the show. Thank you for everyone who's watched live. Thank you to everyone listening after the fact. If you'd like to follow us on any social media platform, you can find us at Double Clutch UK. Big thank you to Kirk, as always, for producing the show, all the work he does on the technical side to make this happen. Anything from you, Kirk? No. Perfect. new followers this week, Discord, Hurley and Sam Bell joined the Discord server. Thank you. Twitch follows, Cranker Thank, that's a fantastic name. And sorry if I get this wrong, because it's quite difficult to see how I'm meant to pronounce it. It's either Same J 1990 or Samage 1990. I can't tell which one it is, but thank you very much. Not only for the follow, but the Twitch Prime subscription. Thank you very much indeed. Where can people find you guys on social if they want to follow you?
Me, Matt, Suns Fans UK. I've also got sunsfansuk.com.co.uk, one or the other, search for it. It's on my profile linked to where I do a weekly roundup, like a weekly newsletter, so you can see what's been going on in the world of the Suns.
Yeah, my Twitter's the name is there. Don't tweet too much about NBA stuff anymore, because I do a lot of student journal stuff in Sheffield, but follows are nice.
Anyone listening to the audio version who can't see it, it's at Harry Harrison.
Oh, yeah, Harry Harrison. FP.
And
I forget about that.
Any final words from anyone before we say goodnight?
Sweet dreams.
Thank you. And we'll draw this show to an end. Thank you again, everyone.
You can't spend a day at the beach without sunscreen. That sun is way too hot.